Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Not a test. This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is it a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh my God, it's early.
Wait a minute. That wasn't supposed to happen. That was. Joining me from the bright side of the road from Grand Forks, from Grand Forks, North Dakota, maybe out on his little perch today, is the All Marine Radio head chef, Kim Holmes. Kim, what is up?
I'm up. And loving it. It's the sun's actually out today. It's only going to get into the 40s today, but it's on its way. 70-degree temperatures next week.
Come on.
I'm pretty pumped.
70 degrees?
Yes. It's only for a couple of days, but...
But, hey, better than nothing.
It's, hey, I'll take whatever the big guy gives me. You know? It's okay.
Exactly.
Pretty cool.
The, you got the lady you got Ruth Ann her cookbook, so that had to be that. Thank you for doing that.
My pleasure. She's a sweetheart. She apologized for being late and couldn't find us. She drove by a couple of times. I'm out there on the balcony waving like crazy. Finally, she spotted me, pulled in, and went down. And I threw her the cookbook, had it all in a Ziploc bag so it wouldn't get damaged.
Nice.
But
well done.
Yeah. Yeah, And the fact that her husband loved Beth's key lime pie,
right,
which Beth baked it because she used egg yolks and stuff in there. And normally you don't have to cook key lime pie sometimes. So, but Beth cooked it, so it was extra special good. And her husband had passed away a couple of years ago, and she was still talking about it. She said it was so good.
Right.
So that was cool to be able to do that for her.
No, very, very nice. And, well done. Well done. The
my pleasure.
I want to talk to you about a few things today. One,
I got my instructions.
Okay. So let's talk profit margins because, you know, we talked last week. We talked about, you know, how would restaurants and bars, you know, something that Kim's run his whole life, how would restaurants and bars come out of this? And yesterday, You know, the president announced that, you know, the governors of each state were going to be given criteria, you know, to operate along. The federal government, as it should be, is in oversight, but the decisions will be left to the governors of the state, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Now, and I think that's right. And again, one of the things I said in the first hour was you're going to see the beauty of capitalism and you're going to see the beauty of America. Now, are there going to be states that stumble and have to go backwards? Absolutely. Are there going to be cities and counties that do that? Absolutely.
Yep.
But what you're going to see is you're going to see the innovation of the private sector come through in terms of testing, in terms of ways to do this, where you can maybe not be as profitable as you were, but you can be in business. You can be an ongoing concern. So now, and as I was thinking about that, I thought, you know, with you coming on today, I thought, well, Kim's a business owner. You know, and I heard some guy talk about, well, the profit margins in the restaurant business are not great, in the bar business are not great. So how many fewer seats can you have in a joint and yet still, or just in terms of breaking even, because what the hell, you're not going to operate just to go further into debt. So yeah. What are the profits? What are the profits in food?
Anywhere from 5 to 15%.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. It's those of us that are in the restaurant business, unless you have a franchise. And then you're dealing with volume. And it can, you make your margins pretty guaranteed. If you follow, you know, the franchise game plan. But for owner-operated small business, they're tight. You have to be tight with your money. I gave a lot of stuff away, and I was pretty generous. But I still made it all right, but it was close. If I had 10% net, I was a happy camper.
10%
at the end of the year.
All right.
And yeah, if I had 10% at the end of the year, I thought I was in the front row.
Got it. Okay, so let's talk about – we talked about and let's just take a part of your restaurant, the dining room part. So if everybody draws a rectangle, okay?
Yeah.
And there's – and puts X's on each side of the on each side, and then put circles down the middle and just make like four of them in the rectangle. And let's just say that's Kim's dining room. What Kim talked about was, you know, pulling out those four, the center tables. So you have enough spacing so that people come in and feel comfortable. And then he's got a couple of and envision the same thing in a couple of things that had been used as larger group events. If we did something like that, if every restaurant does something like that, if you would have done that at your restaurant, would you have been able to remain, you know, either break even with that much revenue left?
First of all, I'd have to really tighten up the menu, drop a lot of stuff because of food costs. If the dining room is the way it is, like we discussed, that's a third of my dining room I've eliminated of my main dining room. So that means you cut back on the wait staff, and you probably eliminate at least one kitchen spot, one cook.
Got it.
And so you pretty much a third of your seats, if you ran a really tight ship, shortened your menu, kept all the most popular items on the menu that you have, which were pretty substantial. So it would be a tough call for Beth and I. But we'd certainly do it, and might even have to change the format. Like keep the prime rib, for example, keep the fish, and then change it up to gourmet sandwiches and salads. You'd have to make some serious adjustments.
Well, this is one of the things I'm talking about of the beauty of capitalism. Right?
Yeah.
So you've already heard Kim say, you know, I'm going to have to simplify the menu, right? I might have to leave off some high-end things, you know, that I do for people that don't really return or give me a good return on what I do. I'm going to have to cut some staff, and I'm going to and then I might have to evolve my menu further. And that's my point about capitalism and Americans and the United States. And
yes. And
I think, you know, again, I think we all get the social, you know, the physical distancing piece of this. For us to go out as a group of four for our waiter to stand 6 feet away, right, to slide our meals to us. I mean, we can do that as Americans.
Yeah.
And this sitting at home craziness for a guy like Kim, if he still owned that restaurant, right? The owner of the building,
I'd be climbing the walls.
Oh my God, the owner of the building is not going to say, "Yeah, Kim, don't pay your rent this month."
Yeah,
I mean, maybe somebody would do that.
In my case, I own the building,
right?
But I still had a payment to the bank,
right?
And I was blessed to have a great bank, which was very understanding when I was squeezed and had hard financial times. Once in a while, they always backed me because they know what I brought to the table in the big picture. But that's, you know, but for a building owner, he would have to say, I'm going to give you some rent free, a month, 2 months. I don't know.
But yeah, not too many. I don't think too many of them would do that.
I don't think so either.
So you can see, to me, here's one of the things, the difference between, you know, if you're paying to own it or if you're just renting. What I've seen is discussion about, well, if you're paying to own it, all we're going to do is we're going to extend your payments by 3 months. There's going to be no interest penalty. There's going to be no nothing else penalty. We're just going to say these payments in March, April, May are going to be X'd out, and we're going to add 3 at the end of the month. The problem then is kind of reduced to the people that rent. Now, if I have to pay on that building and I'm not getting any relief, then I'm not going to give you any relief. So to me, that's really where the rub in this goes. But the part I want to focus on is the improvisational piece that you just kind of went through in your head. And that's what I think people are going to figure out. They're going to find ways to reduce their labor. They're going to find ways to reduce their food costs so that this can go forward. And, you know, you and I are talking about, you know, the big deck kind of bar business. What happens to that?
Done.
Right.
Done.
So what form does it take? You're going to be able to come with a party of four and sit at a high top, and they're going to be spaced around. And then I'm going to have, you know, electronic things on your table. So I'm going to reduce my wait staff, and I'm going to be able to serve booze and some hors d'oeuvres. And that's how it's going to be. But I mean, those solutions are going to happen because business owners are going to come to them, and you're going to have, you know, you're going to have computer people say, look, you know, if you can do this forever, but here in the short term, these are terminals that you can connect via Bluetooth, you know, blah, 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 blah. And you're going to see those things, and you're going to see American business, you know, be what it is, which is pretty cool, in my opinion.
I think it is, too. But in my case, Mac, if I got the go-ahead to open middle of May, for example, which is the way it's looking now in North Dakota, certainly no later than June 1st if things keep getting better. I would still have my servers and my cooks and everybody that worked in that joint always have a mask on when they were working.
Yep.
And the waiters would wear and the kitchen help would wear rubber gloves.
Right.
You're serving food. And even with rubber gloves, when you get done serving food, I'd go back and with the gloves on, I'd wash my hand, dry them off and go back for more food. But I take this very serious, and that's showing your customers that you're paying attention to what's going on. But there are some people that rent that are just going to be SOL. And so
to me, if you can reduce, you know, federal and state aid to simply that group, you can help them.
You can help them get
through it. But the thing we've got to do is get the people back to work that can go back to work, get them off the dole, and then target those who, you know, who've been most impacted, like, you know, the server who didn't get brought back, like the business owner who's renting and so that they can they can stay in business and minimize the impact to the economy. But
But I would lose a third of my staff.
Right
off the top, and I paid for their health insurance.
Right.
And that's not usual for restaurants.
Right.
Some restaurants pay maybe a little bit. I paid 100% up until the last 5 years I owned Sanders, and then I paid 75% of their health insurance.
Right.
Now, that's why one of the reasons why I had people working for me for 20, 30 years.
Right.
My minimum wage in North Dakota, you only have to pay, $7.25 an hour. Well, when I had the restaurant, it was,
I think not very much,
under $5 an hour for tip servers, and they had to make it up on tips. So when you throw in health insurance to a server, that's monumental. It's for me, it was very important, because I knew that I was only as good as my crew.
Right.
And if I had people that bought into my philosophy and the way I did things, but I took care of them, I'd get 100% out of them, even though,
So when we talk about these innovations, you had a pool room, right? That sometimes when you got really busy, you would convert into tables. I would venture to say, if you lose tables out of the dining room, you could put those tables into the pool room. Yes.
Well, I had tables in the pool room.
Not all the time.
I had that pool room. I moved that pool table out shortly after.
Did I left maybe?
You came to town. I think I had it for maybe 2 years. And then somebody pointed out to me, you know how much money you're losing by not having tables in there?
Right.
And I did the math and I said, oh my God.
Hello.
You gotta be kidding me.
Right.
And I sold the pool table.
But my point is,
and I added 30 seats.
Right. My point is that whether it be a bar that has pool tables or whatever, you know, all of a sudden you have half the number. It's that kind of, you know, innovation and improvisation.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That is gonna help people stay in business. And you're gonna see that happen around the country. And same thing,
let me tell you,
we've talked, the other thing is, will we see, spectators at sporting events? In my opinion, you are going to see, and here's what's going to happen. Whether it's baseball, basketball, football, or hockey, there's going to be a blueprint that every arena comes up with that says, okay, people are going to be every third row. And then you can buy seats for your party that you come with.
Yes.
Right? So you could buy, X number of seats in this row. And then there's going to be two seats between you and the other person at the other end of the row. And then there's going to be two rows between everybody. And so now that's not a great gate, but if you can, quote unquote, sell out that venue, right, maybe that gets you to breaking even. Or I don't know what the margins are in professional sports. But there's all kinds of ways that you can do that. And what is the difference between, when I go into the Staples Center, if they have the tape on the ground, and when I go into Home Depot when they have tape on the ground? The answer to me is there is no difference, right? And I get it. When I'm there, I got to have my mask on. So I will do that.
Yep.
So I'll have my LA Kings mask on when I go to the Kings game. Right. And we'll turn it into a moneymaker and all that stuff. But I think that people around the country, we get it. Right. We get it. And so there's going to be people like Kim that are more susceptible. We were joking that the Grim Reaper is calling out his name. Where is Holmes, man? Right. Where is Holmes? Heart condition.
How does he escape me?
Diabetes. Come out, Kimmy. come out, the Grim Heart Reaper.
Condition. Oh, Kimmy. Right? We know you're there.
We know you're there. Stop hiding from us. And so, I mean, people like that are going to have to wait, you know, because, you know, just not the juice ain't worth the squeeze. But and so I think that you're going to see these things happen. And, you know, and they're going to happen, I would say, sooner rather than later. And again, I think it's politicians are terrified because they know what's going to happen. And that is when we come out of this, there are going to be people that get sick and die. Right. And but you cannot keep the country at home, you know, indefinitely. That just is not going to work. And what politicians are worried about is that, you know, somebody dies and then now you have their family on TV accusing the governor of killing my husband and all the rest of that. And they do not want that. Trust me. So, and again, I, you know, Governor Cuomo, you know, God bless him. I mean, to me, he did not do the nation any favors by going on TV and doing his Chicken Little thing. He went from saying that we're going to have 200,000 people dead in New York City to 10 days later giving away ventilators to other states. And so to me, there's a saying in the Marine Corps, slow is pro. And I think what that means is steady, right, deliberate, you know, under duress. If you do that, that's what it is to be a professional. And so to me, I don't know that we had that across the board, and it certainly, I think, incited, you know, a level of anxiety and fear that maybe wasn't necessary even as we kind of figure this out. So, but interesting. And just, it's, you know, here's an email. Mac, pretty interesting to hear the chef think like the entrepreneur that he was in his lifetime, the little tumblers that fell in his head as things began to click as an entrepreneur, where he would save money, what he would do with his menu. I would tell you this, after everything I've heard him talk about on the program, it really wouldn't matter to me what was on his menu. What I would go there for would be to go out. I knew that whatever he'd serve me would be good, but we need to go out. We need to feel normal. We need to be with our friends. And that's part of the reason why I would go, let alone to be around he and it sounds like the wonderful place that he had. So I'm not sure the menu is the most important thing. It's been interesting to hear the business side of this, though. I was shocked when he said 5 to 15%.
Say what? I missed that. What?
He said he was shocked when you said 5 to 15%.
Yeah, well, that's just that showbiz. And like me, all my whole life, I loved the restaurant business. It was a way of life for me. And that, to me, is how you have to approach this business. And especially now, you just can't get into it. Your places, you're going to find places getting smaller and more separation, fewer employees.
Right. And more and more automated.
And a lot. That's what my next statement. And automation is going to come roaring into the restaurant business. I see it now on certain pieces of equipment and things, but
no. If you go to Outback Steakhouse,
I would still embrace the hell out of this and accept the challenge, and just like I did after the flood, I just said, "This flood isn't going to kick my ass. I'm coming back, and I'm going to come back better."
Right.
And it's all in the head, man. It's attitude and your approach, and you've got a good crew that you've maintained, and. And then you go after it again. But there are people that are going to struggle and that aren't going to make it. The big joints with the 250, 300 seats,
right.
They're going to have to cut their seats by 30%. But it can be done.
Yeah.
And it will be done because they're going to figure it out. And what got me thinking was with sporting events. I was thinking, oh, Jesus, man, nobody's going to go to a sporting event until there's a vaccine. And then you were talking this earlier, and each team merchandises their own masks.
Right.
With the team logo. I mean, it could be a hoot. Separation. No, I mean,
right. It's just the things that you see now when you go to the grocery store, which is the plexiglass in front of. You go to Home Depot. Yep. They now have a plexiglass booth, and the plexiglass is from the waist up, that they're little person. Yep. So the person can reach underneath and zap the stuff that you're checking out with, right? They bag it, you know, you swipe your card and you do all that. And there is no, they're safe. And so when you look at that and you say, okay, so why can't I do that at the sporting goods store? Why can't I do that at the paint? Why can't I do that at the paint store? Why can't I do that? So anyway, I think that, you know, as you can tell, I'm excited because I think the business community, you know, like everybody's seen here this morning. You give them a shot, and they'll figure out how to make money. I mean, that's in the American DNA, man.
Oh, that's who we are,
right? And let me tell you, there are labs and businesses all over the United States and all over the world that are desperately trying to figure something out so they can offer it, so they can make money off it, right? And that's why you'll see the free world lead the way on that stuff because of the incredible incentive there is. And so to me, I think that we're all going to get a chance to see American entrepreneurship and what capitalism promotes in terms of the individual, right, the ability to make it and whatnot. Let me read you an email. Mac, one of the things that I thought was pretty cool from your show last week, and I just wanted to write in and say this, was your point and your discussion with the chef about relearning lessons that our grandparents lived that we used to kind of chuckle about.
Yeah.
I don't think in the future you're going to have to tell people why they should have a savings account. I think people will look back on these days, especially if you were part of the country that got thrown into unemployment, that was living paycheck to paycheck, and then laid in bed at night wondering how in God's name you were going to pull a rabbit out of a hat again. That is the worst. Maybe I don't need the latest iPhone. Maybe we'll buy used cars in the future. Maybe we will live within a budget and create for ourselves a surplus so that we can get through this stuff again. That lesson has been lost on many of our culture, and you were right. It's a time when we can all learn them, first lesson, and let's just hope that people do. Really enjoy it.
And welcome back money in a paper bag under the mattress.
Yeah. No, you know what? And that was because bank failures. Again, that wasn't because they were superstitious. And all you have to do, right, is, I mean, if you read John Wooden's book, They Call Me Coach.
Yeah.
It's kind of like George Bailey, when George Bailey's going on his honeymoon and there's the run on the bank and he tells Bert, stop the car. And he gets out, what's going on? And he said, and the guy yells, there's a run on the bank. And he goes, oh, come on. And so his wife just had said, Donna Reed had just said, she was holding cash in her hands that they were going to go on a cruise with. And she said, oh my God, I feel like a bootlegger's wife. Right. it's a great line, and then they go back and they take that cash, and everybody who's coming to withdraw all their money from the Bailey building and loan, they hand out. Well, that's why people kept cash in their home, because banks failed and they lost all their money. John Wooden talks about kind of a very, very similar situation where he was getting married and they were going to go on their honeymoon, and the bank that his money was in failed. And it went away.
Yeah.
And so when you hear things like that, there's a historical reason for that. And so, interesting. No, I mean, the lessons of our grandparents. How funny.
That's for sure. And boy, when we were growing up, we certainly heard about it.
No, they had
from
lived
our grandparents, because right. they and our parents, because they lived it.
Oh, and you know, and when credit cards in the 60s and 70s, when credit cards became a big deal, because before that, yeah. you had a tab with the merchant, right?
Yep, I did.
You had a tab. Can you put it on my tab? And you pay the tab every month. But then credit cards got invented, and I remember this. I was working in college. I was working at the San Diego County Health Department. And I was working in the lab because they paid the most of any part-time job. And they thought I was like a biotech student. And and I said, "No, I'm an economics major." And I mean, this is where they would, like, if a dog had to be put down because they thought it had rabies, you know, they would take the dog's head to the lab. And the lab, you know, would take the dog's brain out and put it on a deli meat slicer. And it would slice the brain, and then they would do tests on brain tissue. So, yeah, I remember, and I'm like the dishwasher there, and I stained slides for gonorrhea and syphilis. I would help. Our handyman was a guy named Lou. He was Jewish, and he was probably 70 years old, something like that. And you know, proverbial guy with those gray work pants, right? Dickie work pants and a white t-shirt and a long – and the key thing on his belt that you could pull out and had like a million keys on it. That was Lou.
Yeah.
And so Lou's Jewish. And so one day he calls me and goes, "Hey, I need your help." I said, "Okay, what are we going to do?" He goes, I got to pull this brain out of this dog. And so, but it was a St. Bernard, so the head was big. And I had to, I know, but anyway, I won't go into the details with you. But anyway, so Lou says, "Hey, I'll buy you lunch." And I said, "Okay." So with that, he goes into his pocket and he pulls out a wad of money. And I was like, "Holy shit, man." And it was one of those like old time, like guys with a wad of money in their pocket. And he looks at me and goes, "Pay as you go, you won't owe." Right. And so it's sayings like that that came from bank failures, that came from the Depression, right? That came from the crash of the stock market in 1929. And they could tell you all of it, right? And Kim's right. We heard about it.
Hey, not only that, but I got out of high school in 64 and I went to Foothill Junior College. And I got all these credit cards in the mail from gas companies. I thought, "Oh, that's cool." So I had a Shell card or something like that. And in a month, I had a $500 bill. Well, 1965, that's a lot of money.
Right. Oh, man.
And I said, "What the hell is this?" And I said, "This is not going to work for me." And I had charged some clothes at a clothing store. And so I had found myself $1,500 in debt. And I said, "This shit won't work." So I cut my credit cards up. This is 1965.
Whoa.
And started paying cash. And I went to the people I owed money. I said, "Look, sorry, I overextended my credit here. But I'll get it all paid back. It's just going to take me a while." They were fine with it. And so fast forward to I moved to Grand Forks in 1985. And I go in to the bank in 1986 to buy my first Harley. And I fill out the application. And she says, "Well, come back tomorrow. And we'll work this out." So I did, filled it out, came back the next day, and she says, "Kim, you don't have a credit history. You don't have any credit cards." And I started to laugh. I said, "Yeah, no shit." I says, I'm cash and carry. I don't believe in credit cards." Well, by then, you had to have a credit card to rent a motel, because to get on an airplane or anything like that. So I ended up getting an American Express card, and I still have one card today, and I pay it off every month. Never got in trouble with that. And God, do they throw credit cards? You know how many offers you get in the mail.
Yeah.
From
yeah, now, I mean, they'll tell you if you don't.
But
if
I learned my lesson back in the '60s. You pay as you go, you know. And so that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
No, well, that's the time.
And that's how we do it. Beth and I do it.
Right. No, I went through that, and yeah. And I don't own.
We all did.
I don't own a credit card anymore. If I don't have it in the bank, I have no recourse. And so, so again, it's let me tell you, you cannot tell your boss to go to hell if you don't have money in the bank, you know?
Yeah.
If you want to be free, you got to save your money. But again, it's been, you know, again, kids don't get raised like that for the most part anymore. All right. You can get a credit card. You can get a credit card and you can, you know, you can go on that cruise you want to go to or that spring break you want to go to. And then you're hooked for life. And now, right, with the whole Equifax and all those credit companies, they know everything you do every month of your life, man.
Yep.
There's no way. I mean, so anyway. So the next thing I want to talk about today. So it's interesting. But you think that if you opened, I hope in North Dakota it's not another month. Maybe there's some parts of this.
He said the middle of May.
I still think that's too much. Another 4 weeks of this stuff for what? For how many cases in the state? Right. I mean, so anyway,
I would rather err on the side of caution. In this case,
but again, Kim, you have people. People that aren't making any money. How can they go another month? That would be what, 3 months that they have no revenue. And it's one thing for guys like you and me, right? Who have but if you don't have anything, what happens to you? And so, to me, I just don't. And here's what: if I was the governor of North Dakota, here's what I'd say: I'd go by county, by city. Okay, look. You know, the northwest corner of the state has seen zero. They're open for business with these rules in place, right? The southwest corner of the state, everywhere but Dickinson, right, which is the biggest city out there, right, is going to be open tomorrow, okay? Yeah. With social distancing, with masks, with all these rules in place, they're open because they just don't have it there. And Dickinson's going to have these rules, and when they can satisfy these rules, then I'll look at opening the city. Blah, blah. So to me, it can't be one size.
I agree with you, Mac.
One size fits all in the state.
You're not getting any argument out of me. I'm thinking that I'm just speaking somebody who's 76 years old and is paying attention to what's going on.
Yeah.
And
my perspective,
at least in North Dakota, everybody is social distancing. Playing by the rules,
and I think it's that way.
You got to open up.
I think it's that way. I mean, you can't. I mean, the forecast was over 200, between 100 and 200,000 deaths. The revised forecast is going to be for less than 60,000 deaths. So, you don't do that unless the country, you know, pretty much gets it. But if you take the perspective of I am a server in a restaurant. I mean, I've got a car payment. I've got a cell phone payment. I've got, I pay in most joints, I'm paying for my own health insurance. What do I do?
If I was a kid, I'd go to a flip phone.
Well, I mean, you can't pay.
I get rid of the big screen.
You gotta
have a cell phone.
But you can't pay for, you can't pay your bills, right?
You can't.
I'm no pay. So to me, there's anyway. Next question. Frittatas.
My favorite meals.
How do you say that?
Frittata.
Frittata. Okay.
And you spelled it right.
What is it?
Okay. It's an Italian omelet, Spanish omelet. It's something will take. I'm going to make a frittata for you and me. So I'll take my regular 8-inch omelet pan. What do you want? Bacon or ham or.
So is there anything? Is it different than any other omelet?
Yes, because you finish it under the broiler. Okay, you cook on the top of the stove. You start with what takes the longest to cook. Could be veggies, you have your eggs mixed up, whipped up with a little milk in there. You have your cheese pre-grated or little chunks of cream cheese, which is what I like to use. You start like you're making an omelet. You wait till the edges of the – you once the eggs are poured in the dish and you preheat your broiler and you put the rack – about 6 to 8 inches below the broiler, okay, before you start this process. So the broiler is getting hot, okay? Then you take your spatula, you lift up the eggs, you let the raw egg go underneath like you're making an omelet. And then about halfway through, you put in half the cheese. And then keep doing that. And then there's about like a quarter of an inch of raw egg kind of on the top. I like to put just Parmesan cheese on or a mixture of Jack and Parmesan. And then you sprinkle that on and then you put it under the broiler. And you pay attention because it's going to take about 60 to 90 seconds. Maybe 120 seconds, because that top, the heat will cook from the top. Yes. It'll puff it up. And so you pull that out and it's puffed up. You cut it in half. You serve it with a salsa or whatever you want to do. If it's a breakfast item, you serve it with fried potatoes or hash browns. That's your call.
Right.
Toast and jelly. If it's lunch, you serve it with a salad, a nice salad. And if it's dinner, you serve it with a salad, have a dessert. And that's a frittata. And one of the greatest dishes in the world. I had my first one in Spain. And it was just had a Spanish frittata, and it had onions and cooked potatoes inside it. And they sold it in slices at room temperature. They cooked it, put it on a platter, cut it in, sixths, I think, and then sold slices. Now, if you're having six people over for breakfast, then you pull out your 12-inch Teflon pan, nonstick pan, and you do the same procedure. And then you pull that out and put it on a platter and cut it into eighths. So there's a couple of pieces left over if somebody wants seconds. And it's a great dish. Very, very good. You can do an all veggie frittata. You can do it with double meats, ham and bacon.
Well, that's the article that and what made me ask you about it was that you could literally do anything with this dish, right?
Yes, you can.
You can literally do anything. Whether you want to do, my mom used to do this thing called clean the refrigerator, and it was really. Right, it was really good sometimes, right? What are we having tonight? We're having clean the refrigerator. And it normally was ground beef with a whole bunch of stuff in there, and it always tasted good. But it extolled the virtues, the flexibility of the frittata.
Yes. And eggs are cheap, and they're good for you. I eat eggs. I got it down to once, twice a week, where I eat eggs.
Now, even with your heart, what I mean, I see.
Fuck that! Excuse me. Yeah, even with my heart, the eggs. Look, some people say eggs are good for your heart. Some people say they're bad for you.
Right.
So I'm gonna say they're good for me.
What is your
if I don't eat them every day? Like if I don't eat 3 eggs a day, I should be okay.
Is that, now, have you talked to your doctor about that, or is that
yes?
Just,
I have.
Okay.
Yes, I have. And Casey says, "Yeah, you can eat eggs for God's sakes. You should keep your eggs to 4 a week." And I have.
So once again, all things in moderation.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
And you can, if it's just you, Mac, you can do a 2-egg frittata. The key is to finish it under the broiler, but you still have to let the top of the egg run underneath, so it cooks. On top of the stove, it cooks, and sometimes the veggies or the bacon or whatever will go underneath. But at the end, when you put your cheese on, it forms a little crust. And oh man, I like pico de gallo with it myself, that's pretty much standard for me.
With your eggs?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And that's healthy,
right?
And you can put avocado in a frittata.
That, let me tell you, to me, you that know, avocado's mandatory.
Knock yourself out.
Yeah, avocado's
it's your
mandatory.
Own imagination.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You were saying avocados?
No, avocado mandatory.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And there's another. Veggie that's good for you too.
Yeah.
Food,
but, and tastes good. Yes. Oh. So the avocado, a little bit of like crumbled bacon, and again,
yep.
You don't need a whole lot of bacon to have. I mean, bacon's a pretty powerful taste. Yes. I mean, you
absolutely, Mac. Two slices of bacon in a 3-egg frittata is chopped up after it's cooked is plenty. And if it's just you and you want to trim down, you can use 1 piece of bacon. I mean, a little goes a long way with when you're cooking a frittata.
Right. Or let me tell you, omelet. I mean, even if you're sprinkling bacon in a salad, I mean, you don't need that much of it to get the great taste. Bacon is one of the most potent things. All right, the last thing that I asked you to talk about is another piece of kitchen machinery.
I have. It's a Manuel Labor piece of machinery.
Manuel Labor. Okay, what is it?
Labor. It is a microplane, okay, and it's for grating garlic. And some people don't like to chop garlic; they just want it grated real fine. Or same with you can grate Parmesan cheese with it. It's a piece of equipment. Mine, I bought at the restaurant supply store. You can buy them at TJ Maxx back in the restaurant, the equipment area, or Bed Bath & Beyond if they haven't closed in your area. Fucking pissed off still. Anyway, excuse me, folks. But it's the blade, it's a grater. And it's, you know, you have your 4-sided graters with 4 different size holes.
Yes.
This is 12-inch long grater, and it's real sharp. I mean really sharp. And so be careful you don't grate your finger, because believe me, I have. And it, a couple of nicks on your fingertips, and you got your
now you're
finger
a,
bandage.
Now you're a pro. The the so
it's, but it's got it's, a it's, mine has a rubber handle, adds another 5 inches onto it, so it's about a foot long, and it's about an inch and a half wide. And I like the wider microplane because it's easier for me to handle. I can grade more, and they have small ones for doing little bitty things, but my big mitts don't go small anymore. So this is the perfect size for all your kitchen. And when you need to grade something, you can grade peppers. You can grade it like jalapenos. You can do that.
Right.
Onions. It almost kind of juices an onion. Gets it really fine. But my favorite use of it is for hard cheeses and garlic. Big, big fan of it for garlic.
And so when okay, you, and, so you can do fresh, right?
Yes.
So you could do fresh. Well, yeah, I heard. I knew that was coming.
Yeah, yeah. You have to have fresh garlic. You can't be doing a jar or opening a jar of crushed garlic. If you want to make a garlic puree and you want to have maybe a pint of it in your fridge, then you take a dozen cloves of garlic, peel them all, throw them in a blender or your Cuisinart with a quarter of a cup of olive oil and puree it, and then put it back in the jar with a glass jar. It's got to be glass, not plastic, because you have to throw that out when you're done because the plastic will stink of garlic. But if it's a glass jar with a lid, then you can put it in there. So then if you want to scoop a garlic for something, you can pull it out. It'll hold for 2 weeks beautifully in your fridge. So, you can do that once every couple of weeks. But Beth and I, we prefer this planer, and we use it pretty much daily. In fact, she's making mac and cheese, and she this morning, and she used it for grating the garlic. It's a good piece of a kitchen equipment, folks. Keeps
so it's
in
called
drawer.
It's called a kitchen planer?
Microplaner. And you'll see it hanging up, and you just ask the helper in the store, let me see your microplanes.
I just see it.
Yeah.
Sur la table, kitchen planer.
Sur la table. Table. Yes. Sur la table.
Very, very fancy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. But man, is it great. You will love it, Mac. And I think you will anyway.
Well, no, you know,
and
they're
not that expensive. They're not that expensive. What if you get one at TJ Maxx, not Sur la table.
Right, right. What you said, though, you know, makes great sense relative to, you know, those things that we tend to buy now in the deli section of our store, right? Minced garlic,
yes.
You know, some of the grated cheese. Well, you could do that fresh, and the taste kind of jumps off the table at you, right?
Big time. And folks, you don't buy the garlic in a package. You buy it. You go over to the bin that has fresh garlic loose. And you can buy shallots. You can grate shallots like that, and garlic, and you pick it from there. And then you take it home. You peel off a couple of cloves, whatever amount you need.
Right.
And then you sit it in your fridge. Put it in a little Ziploc and put it in your fridge, so your fridge doesn't smell
excuse me, smell like garlic.
There you go. The I just am looking at a picture of a Microplane Master Series grater with walnut handles. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different graters. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't know, right, that grading was such a specific science. But it is, right? There's one, it looks like, for grading cheeses and things like that. One for very fine grades. One for medium grades. And then a couple others I don't even know. One very similar to what you're talking about. And so, so very interesting. And again, to me, the thing it promotes is doing it yourself and greater flavor in the food that you're making.
I just love it, folks. You know, the fact that you listening to us every week, and you're obviously all care about food and cooking, and when you can do it yourself, it always ends up being better and gives you a little incentive to maybe experiment here and there and try different methods of cooking things. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to,
you know what to
hope
do with
I
them.
Can answer them.
Yeah, you know what to do with them. All right, my man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No. And everybody has to try a frittata, either for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. It can go either way. I hope to hear about frittata experiences next week.
All right.
And we'll have fun with it.
All right, my friend. Anything else exciting going on?
No, it's just that sports-wise, everybody is coming back for the Sioux hockey team this next year.
Oh.
They did not lose one person for the second year in a row to the NFL. Everybody's coming back.
To the NHL.
NHL, yeah, not the NFL. NHL.
For the record, they didn't lose anybody to the NFL either. So they got that going for them. They got that going for them too. I think most people that, you know, you'll talk to today are a little bit more jump in their step because, you know, as Americans, you know, it seems like, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel. And you're going to start seeing stories of communities that open up and what they're doing and the right and the innovation and the improvisation that Kim talked about. You're going to see that, and I think that's going to inspire other people. I think it's the coolest part of our country. So anyway, all right, Kim, thank you very much for explaining that to us. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Mac. It's always a pleasure to have Friday morning with you and my coffee.
There you go. All right, bud. See you.
Take care. Stay safe.
There. We will. Stay safe. Yeah, you're hearing that more and more. People say that. So anyway, that'll do it on a Friday. So if you're just tuning in, I forgot to start the recording an hour one. So hour one's a little bit short. But I'm going to talk about my trip to the VA yesterday in Long Beach, which was an absolute wonderful experience. Yeah, no kidding. I get on the VA, and I'm always quick to compliment them when they do things right. I needed a prescription and called them, and within, you know, a couple hours, they had it. And then I went up there, and I drove into a parking lot, parked my vehicle, called the phone number on the sign, told them what stall I was in, told them who I was. And, a guy who used to be in the Marine Corps came out with my prescription. And I was on my way. No traffic in Los Angeles. In Orange County. Yeah, 20-minute drive up there and back to Long Beach. Come on. It was awesome. So thank you very much to the folks at the VA. They were awesome. And if I would tell you, if you're out there, don't hesitate to get it, you know, to call them. And there, I've received emails from them during the week. You know, hey, we're open for business. We're doing telemedicine and blah 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 blah. So anyway, my experience with the VA yesterday. So there you have it. And then you'll hear the chef. Actually, you'll hear me talk a little bit about the latest. The Washington Post, Dan Lamothe, who's been on this program. He wrote an article yesterday, which presents some more facts relative to the USS Theodore Roosevelt. So that pretty interesting. So you could check that out. And we talked about that a little bit. And very, very interested to see how, you know, you've seen the Secretary of Defense say that, you know, yeah, he would be open to reinstating Captain Crozier. I'm really interested to see what they do. And I do not believe that would be in the best interest of the Navy. While it would be, you know, the sentimental choice of the crew of that ship, I'm not sure it would be in the best interest of the Navy. Yeah, pretty much no, it's not. Anyway, have a great weekend. All Marine Radio continues here on a Friday. Next week, Alex Hollings will join us. I think Dennis Katolin, Lieutenant Colonel in the United States Marine Corps, writing about information operations, he's going to join us. And part two of the Daryl Horn interview will happen. So, yeah, so next week will be pretty good, too. So don't touch that dial. Excuse me. I didn't get to my kill switch in time. Have a great weekend. On Friday, All Marine Radio, over and out.